I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, March 7th, 2020, and this is episode 58 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So, announcements. The survey is still going on. Thank you to everyone who has completed it. If you are new or didn't hear last week, or just needed a reminder, I'm doing a survey of podcast listeners. So please fill it out. It is at lpenelope.com/survey. And it should be really quick just so I can know more about the listeners. And if you choose to, at the end of the survey, you can enter to win an arc of Cry of Metal and Bone, book 3 in Earthsinger Chronicles. I might add another prize. I don't know. We'll see. Might be a surprise prize too. So again, lpenelope.com/survey. It will be in the show notes. Please fill it out. I would really love to know more about listeners. So this week's best thing is that I finished Act 2 of Requiem of Silence, book 4, last book in Earthsinger Chronicles. And so I finished it earlier this week, and I'm taking the rest of the weekend to read through Acts 1 and 2. Because I was starting to feel like I was losing track of everything that's happening. Acts 1 and 2 are 120,000 words. The first 3 books in the series are all 130 total. So I think this is going to be on track for being 150,000 words. That was my initial feeling. And that seems to be, it might be a little longer. I don't know if I can wrap up all of Act 3 in 30,000 words. But considering I only have a couple of weeks left to write and finish Act 3, then it shouldn't be too long. So if you've been on this journey with me, you will know how difficult this book has been. Wrapping up a series is hard. And because of the peculiar journey that we've taken to get to book 4, it's added additional difficulty. As I'm getting into the last act of the last book, it just really clarified for me some things that I don't want to repeat in the future. So, you know, when I had 3 books done, I was ready to self-publish the third one when I got the contract with St. Martin's Press. And so I had, you know, for a couple of years, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen in book 4, but I knew the trajectory. I knew the beginning. I knew the end. I knew the basic things that were going to have happen. And since I had written 3 books, I was on that path. And then with the special edition of Song of Blood and Stone, adding 40,000 words to book 1, then I had to go and add, I think I added 30,000 to book 2 and another, no, I added 40,000 to book 2 and 30,000 to book 3. So now we're left with, what is that, 110,000 extra words that have to be wrapped up in book 4 that I had not intended to even have. Some of those words, like when I've talked about, you know, how I was able to add a storyline to book 1 for the special edition, when my publisher asked me to, you know, I pulled some things from book 3. I pulled some characters that I was going to do more with later and started just doing more with them earlier. Same thing with book 2. If you happened to read the self-published version of Whispers of Shadow and Flame, the whole Zelly storyline wasn't there. It's interesting because I happened to see a review of one of the first 2 books. No, it was the second book. It was Whispers, because it was a positive review, but they were kind of like, again, we have this extra storyline that doesn't really connect to the first one. And yeah, we do. That's not the way it originally was. And they were wondering if it was going to connect in book 3. And it absolutely does. So anybody who has been put off by that, there is a plan. They come through in book 3 and book 4. But yeah, I've got these sort of storylines, snaked through books 1 and 2 that tangentially relate but don't completely connect to the main storyline until book 3, when everything starts coming together. And then book 4, it's together. I've mentioned they go on their side quests and they come back. So it is all part of this larger plan, but adding those storylines shifted everything for book 4 and just made it twice as hard as it would have been. And so to get to the point where I finished Act 2, and so far I've read the first 60,000 words. So I'm halfway through my read through of Acts 1 and 2. And so far everything's been smooth. Like, you know, it's one of those lessons that when everything that you're writing feels like it's terrible and it's falling apart, 9 times out of 10, it's not. When you go back, you get a little bit of distance. And the distance for me is, you know, I started writing Act One months ago. So I've gone through it, you know, polished it, but I haven't, you know, I've been just pushing forward. So I'm reading stuff that I haven't really read in 3, 4, 6 months sometimes. And it's holding together. So far, so good, you know. As I was writing the ending of Act Two, though, I was really feeling like some of the threads were getting away from me. And, you know, we'll see how it goes as I finish up the read-through this weekend. But it's a lot. You know, landing this plane takes a lot. And finishing, tying up the threads and the storylines without it being bloated and scattered and, you know, just too much is one of my main concerns. I was listening to the Smart Bitches podcast and they interviewed Sarah J. Maas this week, which huge get for Sarah Wendell. Props to her because, yeah, I mean, Sarah J. Maas, obviously. A Court of Thorns and Roses, Throne of Glass series, huge, huge author of YA fantasy. And she was talking about, I think she was talking about ending the Throne of Glass series, I believe, and how it sounds like her books are like 200,000 words, because she was talking about they had to change the paper because the glue wouldn't fit the amount of pages that she had in the book, and that's next level. But in the last book, she was just tying up all these things, and it was this big, massive book to wrap up the storylines, and kind of, like, I understood what she was talking about, but I don't want it to feel big and massive, and I want it to feel like everything is purposeful and that I had a handle on it. And at the end of writing Act Two, I was not feeling like I had a strong handle. I just felt like things were getting away from me. As I am going back through and, you know, I'm seeing, oh, there were some things that I wrote that I forgot about that I need to pay off, and maybe some things that I can cut out that I started adding a little too late and don't really need to have in there. And so that can help me trim a little bit. So it's a really good process to be going through to take these few days, even though I know I still have to push to the end. It is helping me so much to just refresh myself on some of the things. For instance, there is a dog that I gave one of the characters that I completely forgot about. This dog never appears again. I have to put the dog back in and figure out what's going on with this dog. And I had made that note like 2 months ago. Where's the dog? And then, of course, I forgot again. Because it's on a note card somewhere. So I have these index cards. Every couple of weeks, I go through them. And so whenever I get an idea, like, where's the dog? I write it on the index card just with things that I need to wrap up. Themes, storylines, character arc things that I know that I need to address at some point. And some of them I actually don't need to address. Sometimes I cut them. But going through these index cards, and like there's 20 or 30 of them, I think, right now, just reminding myself regularly, you know what? I don't think that dog is on the card. The dog I wrote somewhere else, which is the problem. I did not put the dog on the index card. And I'm about to do it right now so I don't forget again. But yeah, Scrivener tells me the first time I wrote each scene. And the first few scenes of this book were written in August of last year, of 2019. So between August and March, I've forgotten some things that I put in there that I wanted to pay off. And, you know, not everything, not every storyline or thread should get wrapped up at the end of a series. I think you always want to leave a little bit of room, a little thing you can pull on later on if you decide to go back, or just so it doesn't feel too pat, so that the reader is still has some things to think about, but at the same time, make it satisfying, which involves wrapping up the major things. Another interesting thing about this series is that, and how it changed since I originally conceived it, was, you know, I knew it was going to be 4 books after I wrote the first one. And I was trying to go for the romance thing with a different couple per book. And then I started writing book two. And Whispers really got away from me. So the reason why Whispers of Shadow and Flame ends in a bit of a cliffhanger is because at some point, struggling through this second book that I was writing, I realized I had to split it into 2 books. And so when book three comes out, or those of you who read the arc, the resolution of Darwin and Kiara's arc that happens at the end of book three, I had intended to fit all of that story into book two. And my critique partner, thank goodness for her, because she was like, Leslie, this seems like you need to write two books. And I was like, no, it's supposed to be one couple per book. There is another couple in book three. So I do. And then there's not. So there ends up being one couple per book. But I hadn't intended to split that arc like that. And so that had ripple effects for the rest of the series, too, early on. So even when I was still self-publishing, and I thought I'd figured that out. But then figuring that out while adding yet another storyline in, when the publisher asked me to, was just more layers of complexity and more things to deal with. And sometimes I feel like I wrote myself into the world's biggest corner for book four with all of these things. You know, the books were already a good length, and then I added more to them. And it's just characters to wrap up, storylines, themes that I was echoing. You know, I was trying to use the subplots that I added into each of the first three books to echo or to reinforce the main themes of the book. And I think I did that. I'm really happy with all of the storylines that I added. I understand if readers are like, why doesn't this connect? And I don't really understand. But I do love those characters, and they were always part of the story. And so that hasn't been the issue, but keeping book four from sprawling wildly out of control has been a constant tug of war. And I am happy to note, as I do this read-through, that at least the first 60,000 words I'm feeling good about. So we'll see what happens with the rest of them. Also in struggling with this book and struggling with all of the various books, they're all a struggle. But I do feel like I've become a better writer, and I can just feel the muscles flexing. I will reluctantly admit to being a perfectionist, but this process has really tempered that. You can only be so much of a perfectionist with a deadline and a challenge like this. So now, as opposed to five and six drafts of everything, I can do it in three. I can do a fast draft. I can do a clean and then another polish. Some of these scenes that I'm reading, this is only the third time I'm really going through them to polish them, and they're mostly okay. And I never dreamed 2 years ago that that could be the case. And even as I was starting the read through, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this read through in 4 days, because so many scenes I only looked at twice. This is only the third time, and they're clean and they work and they're actually nice. There's actually, you know, figurative language and metaphors, and I'm feeling emotions through them. And so it's like, I can do this in three passes. This is actually possible. Some scenes require more, and especially when I change my mind or I realize something's wrong and I have to thread it through, but a lot of them don't. And that is really amazing to discover or rediscover, if I discovered it before and I've talked about it before and forgot, because that's part of the process too. But yeah, I have to trust myself more. And so going through these kind of challenges as a writer is teaching me to trust myself more, which I think I need, which is, I think everybody needs. So that is my drawn out writing update. But I thought it was important to talk about, because all creatives, you know, go through these things. And I just feel like the series has been an enormous challenge, and I'm super happy that, at least for me, I have to write for myself, and I'm really enjoying this book so far after everything I've gone through to get it written. And I'm still going through. So going into Act 3 strong, hopefully, and feeling good about it. That's the best thing. And in book recommendations, I finished A Cowboy to Remember by Rebecca Weatherspoon, and I highly recommend it. It is an amnesia plot, which I think I pre-ordered a long time ago and never even bothered to read the description, because Rebecca Weatherspoon is a great writer and I've enjoyed lots of her books. So yeah, bought it. And then I was like, oh, amnesia, that's not my favorite thing, but I do trust her. So let's check it out. And it worked. Yeah, it really did. It was So the main character is like a celebrity chef. She's on one of those talk show type things called with a the in the title. And she has an accident early on and has amnesia. And so has to go back home sort of to this ranch that she grew up in. She doesn't have any family, but these are like friends who are like family. But she's been estranged from them. And then there's a sexy cowboy, black cowboys in Southern California. And so it's a second chance love story, which is also not my favorite thing. But with the amnesia, it's more like a first chance love story that then becomes second chance. And very strong, highly recommend it. Check it out. We have a visitor. Sterling has entered the building. The cats on the podcast are becoming a thing. So I watched a couple of movies. We were listening to, David Alan Greer on a podcast, and my husband and I, and it came out that I had never seen A Soldier Story, and his jaw literally dropped. He was like, what? We have to watch it tonight. And I was like, well, it's 9:45, so we're not watching it tonight, but we can watch it tomorrow. And so the next day, we rented it from Amazon Prime. And yeah, I don't know how I missed A Soldier Story, because he was like, it's got every black actor that ever was in the 80s in it. And that's true. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. Obviously, it's very good. I think the play won like a Pulitzer or something, some kind of the bigger play prizes. And then I had to look up like who wrote it, because it's so nuanced about black life in America and the way that black people see each other and themselves and the way that they had to survive during Jim Crow. And because it takes place in 44 during World War II on an army base with these black soldiers. And so it's just extremely nuanced about black identity and like different ways that people survived American apartheid, you know? And so, I was fascinated by it. And then the surface, the actual plot, is just like a simple murder mystery, you know, just like a standard mystery story that with people. Ah, okay. So now Sterling is trying to eat my braids. No. So yeah, A Soldier Story, a simple murder mystery, but with all of these nuanced ideas and characters interacting. And it was just very black and I really enjoyed it. So if somehow you missed it, never saw it, check it out. And then last night, by myself, I watched Destination Wedding with Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. And now it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I watched the whole thing. I immediately texted my friends to say they had to watch it. And then I rewound it and watched it again all the way through. I mean, in my opinion, it's like nearly perfect. It is everything that I'm looking for in a movie. And then I read some reviews, which it has a lot of bad reviews, because it is an anti-romance rom-com, which I saw written and it made perfect sense. I also saw that it was about like two terrible people. I don't know if they're terrible. They're very damaged people. But it reminds me of like the great indie movies that I loved. Things like Trust by Hal Hartley, super, super indie. Like if Trust by Hal Hartley had been made for $5 million, when it was actually made for like $100,000 or something. If they had a slightly bigger budget, it might have been Destination Wedding. They're actually two totally different films, but they are sort of about reprehensible people in a certain, and damaged people with a very specific, unique outlook on life. But yeah, I loved it. I would watch it any time of the day. I might watch it again this weekend. We'll see. But it was definitely polarizing, so I totally understand if other people did not like it. I actually don't understand, but like intellectually, I get why someone might have a bad reaction to this movie. But for me, it is just like Leslie's catnip all the way around, beginning to end. The way that it's shot, the static camera, the way that only two people have any dialogue in the whole movie. Everyone else is just background characters. It's almost like a play. It's so wordy. It's so talky. And I'm sure that turns a lot of people off too. I saw words like boring. No, I was not bored. But, you know, they could have maybe talked 5% less and it would have been just as good. But that was kind of the whole point. Anyway, I'm late to this. You know, I remember people talking about it and I paid absolutely no attention to it. And then I happened upon it and watched the trailer and I was like, oh, this is my kind of movie. Last thing about TV and films. I did give up on Sanditon. I had Sanditon on PBS, the Jane Austen-esque. I don't know if you can call it Jane Austen because I was going to go back and watch the rest of it. I think I watched the first five episodes, four or five. And one of my very best friends in the world, who I trust implicitly, Inez Johnson, she was like, Leslie, do not watch the end. Trust me, do not watch it. And I was like, I do trust you. I know you're right. I'm sure I'll hate it, but I feel like I need the completion. I need to know what happens. And normally I am not a fan of spoilers. I never want to be spoiled, like almost never. If there's a strong chance I'm going to watch it, if I'm never going to watch it, then I'll be spoiled. So she was so emphatic and I was like, fine, spoil it for me. And she did. And I was like, oh no, I'm not watching that. I'm done. Thank you. I'm sorry I doubted you even for a moment. I didn't actually doubt you. I just let my high input, high consistency personality drive, like take the wheel when I know that I have trusted you for the past, you know, 20 some years, and I will continue to do so. If you don't know about the end of Sanditon, go spoil it for yourself, because that is not Jane Austen. And I don't know what Andrew Davies was doing, but I am mad on behalf of everyone who actually watched all eight episodes. I'm deleting it from the DVR. That is it. On to bigger and better and more positive, happy things. So that is it for me for this week. I am going to hopefully get the taxes done this weekend, which I've been putting off. I try to get my taxes together by the end of February. Here it is, March 7th. Haven't done it yet, which means tomorrow is my deadline. And our taxes are kind of complicated because we have three businesses between the two of us and rental property, and I'm self-employed, and it's just a whole thing. So we have an accountant. I used to do them myself. And then once, at one point, I had three different businesses. I had two LLCs and a sole proprietorship, and I could no longer do my taxes myself. I just have to organize everything, get my profit and loss statements out of my accounting system. Not to belabor the point, I'm going to do my taxes this weekend and get the rest of this book read. And I've already sent Hush of Storm and Sorrow. I've uploaded it to all the retailers for the pre-order. Well in advance of the deadline. I'm very happy about that. So that's just off my plate. That comes out in a little bit. Still working on the promo. I'm not going to talk about that because that makes me sad. But yeah, those are my weekend goals. And then next week, I will get into Act 3. And I will send Acts 1 and 2 to my beta readers and my agent. Whew. All right. Back to it. I hope you have a wonderful week. And I will talk to you next time. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. The survey is at lpenelope.com/survey. And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a rating and a review, please, to help the show. Watch the video episodes on YouTube. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more outstanding podcasts, check out frolic.media/podcasts.